Jai Guru Jai. Jai Guru Jai Guru Jai Guru Jai Charan Singh Charan Singh Jai Guru Jai Charan Singh Charan Singh Jai Guru Jai Jai Guru Jai Guru Jai Guru Jai Guru Jai Guru Jai Master Jesus, Jai Guru Jai. Jai Guru Jai Guru Jai Guru Jai. Jai Guru Jai Guru Jai Guru Jai. Babaji, Babaji, Jai Guru Jai. Babaji, Babaji, Jai Guru Jai. Jai Guru Jai, Guru Jai, Guru Jai. Jai Guru Jai, Guru Jai, Guru Jai. Sri Yukteswar, Sri Yukteswar, Jai Guru Jai. Sri Yukteswar, Sri Yukteswar, Jai Guru Jai. Jai Guru Jai Guru Jai Guru Jai Jai Guru Jai Guru Jai Guru Jai Charan Singh Guru Jai Charan Singh Charan Singh
Take care of it. I'll be there myself. Let's raise our hands. Divine will flowing through us will dissolve and eliminate all those conditions that interfere the normal and harmonious flow of Tam Dad. Divine will flowing through us will strengthen and rebuild all those conditions that interfere and are necessary for the normal and harmonious flow of Tam Dad. He said, it is done, so be it. Om, Om, Om. Oh, oh. Thank you. Energy. Yes, we'll just have some question and answers concerning what we covered the last 2 days. Anyone wants to ask some questions? Yes.
If there is no perfect marriage.
If there is no.
If there is no perfect marriage.
If there is no perfect marriage.
Then the experience this far learning.
The experience this far is learning. Yes. You see, perfect marriage does exist. It exists when two individuals grow together in consciousness and are able to lock in consciousness. The present living master, Charan Singh, when he was a boy, his grandfather told him he was going to get married. He says, no, I don't want to get married, I want to renounce the world. I want to go up and be a lawyer, renounce the world. Grandfather laughed. When he was going to school, one day, there was a disciple of the grandfather who had a young daughter, and the daughter said to the grandfather, her own father, she said, I want to go and see the great master while we're on train. So the father says, no, the train don't stop at this spot, and we can't stop and see the great master. She says, I want to go and see the great master. And she kept on this other little child and kept on stamping her feet. When the train came towards the junction where the great master lived, but it doesn't stop there, the train began to slow down all of a sudden and would not move. It came to a grinding halt. The wheels are turning, but the train would not move. The engineers came out and they couldn't figure it out, so they had to let the people off at that junction. So the girl said to her dad, well, we can go and see Great Master because the train won't be ready for several hours. So they went up to see the Great Master. While they're coming into the compound, Great Master was holding Satsanga. He had his eyes closed. He walked in and looked around. And he opened his eyes and he saw her. And he said, why do you bother me with such things as stopping the train? Now, he had never seen a girl before. She was a very young girl. And she ran up to the great master and said, great master, I want to be initiated. Everybody jumped, no, master, don't initiate her, she's too young, good girl. He looked at everybody, then he said, all right. And he started initiating her. Before he could even touch her, she was starting to see the light and hear the sound currents. So, she was describing all the realms, verbally, aloud to everybody, realms that the others had never been to. And they begin to realize that here is somebody who is a very unusual person. The oldest disciple of the great master, who had been all to the highest realm, when she started to describe that realm, he perked up his ears. Well, just then, the grandson is coming in. After the great master finished initiating the girl, and she was standing there with her father, the grandson came in to pay respects to the grandfather, and the grandfather says, There's your wife. No, Grandpa, I don't want to get married. I'm going to be a lawyer, I'm going to be a renunciate. Don't worry, that's your wife. So he says, Grandfather, if I got to marry, she's got to follow me all the way up to where I can go in my spiritual life. And she can't follow me there, I don't want to marry her. Grandpa said, that's going to be your wife. So he sat down there and started to meditate. And the girl sat down and meditated at the same time. 1 hour passed. He opened his eyes. He shook his head. He said, all right, Grandfather, I accept. There was not a region he could go that she could not go. She went every region he could go inside. He accepted them after college to get married. The grandfather married him. So perfect marriage does exist. When the female form has the same power drive with the male form in the inner life, then perfection is possible. Because they're interlocking now on an inner realm and an outer realm. Because any realm that he can go for inner consciousness, the wife would be there. So marriage was made in heaven long before he realized it. Some of us go through life never wanting to get married, or have certain information given to them about their marriage, when they will be married, who they will marry. And those individuals do work it out. I've met a few like that. There was a boy who studied with Yogananda. When I met him, he was a grown man and had 2 kids. But he was a boy at the time with Yogananda. And he wanted to be a renunciate. So every day he would go to church and meditate. And one day, Yogananda said to him, boy, you're going to get married. He says, Master, I don't want to get married. I want to ask, what is my future? So the master looked at him and says, your future is that you get married and settle down. He says, but I want to be a minister. I want to follow the path and teach. He says, you'll get married and settle down. The boy was disheartened. Anyway, when time went by, he said, Master, if I'm going to get married, would you pick the wife for me? He says, Divine Mother will pick her. He kept on attending classes, and while he was sitting in front one day listening to the master on a Sunday, there was a woman with her daughter came in. They were sitting right behind, and the master finished lecturing and he looked around after the meditation, and they were all going to go out. And he said to the boy, that's your wife over there. So the boy looked at the girl, he never met. No, Master, that can't be. That's your wife. They're coming out of the church and they're going up to the restaurant to eat. He's busy running up the step. He slips on the stairway and he's falling backwards. And who should catch him by the seat of his pants? The girl, prevent him from falling on his head. What can he do? They're married and I have two beautiful children. From that incident, a budding romance grew into a beautiful marriage. But you see, guidance from those realms or from those individuals can lead us to the perfect marriage. That's why in the ancient days, they used to resort to the priest or the master to find the wife or the husband, to straighten them out, to understand themselves. So perfect marriages do exist. It's just a few instances, a lot of them. Now when you say perfect marriage, we must clarify this. That does not say that they don't have their moments of confrontation. Master's wife is a doctor, a naturopath, and she tells him off where to get off with his health. He has diabetes, and she regulates his diet and everything, and his clothes and everything, his writings. And he's a Sagittarius and she's a Taurus. Yeah. So it's interesting. But it's the love that resonates from inside that they can lock inside. The outward life is comical when you see it. Yeah. It's beautiful to understand that masters who are realizing consciousness, or they live through a comedy life on the outer realm. Like the colonel once said, he had a Volkswagen. They were driving around all these years, and the wife started to pray for a bigger car. And after they got the big car, it cost more to take care of the car. Now they don't want it. That's the comedy of the whole thing. They have a perfect marriage. Now his wife is not a vegetarian, but she would make sure that he has all the vegetarian food, but she loves her smokes, her snaps, and her good steaks. Interesting, huh? Well, that's a perfect marriage. You see, at least she is not condemning his way of life. She's making sure that he's got his way of life, and doing it a very good job of keeping him that way. This is what you're looking at, the perfect marriage. It's not tearing the other person down. It is understanding the other person's way of life and catering to that way of life, and let them respect your way of life and you live yours. Without that, it's that mutual respect for what the other person wants to be or do.
You're talking about Colonel Byrd, right?
Yeah. You know, he told me that. He says, my wife makes sure I have everything meticulous. That she makes sure that no egg or nothing. She read the labels 100 times to make sure there's nothing there. He says, but she loves her little snaps. The first time I met him, you know, I said, Colonel, she ever used cigars? Oh, cigarillos. No, but perfect marriage is not necessarily what we think, that the other individual's got to toe the line of where we're going. There is that growth between individuals. As long as each one understands we are human beings, we've come through many aspects, and we are a long way to go concerning the physical body and the male or the female. So when we get into some more details tomorrow, you'll see some interesting facts of the behavior between husband and wife.
The cycles that people have, like the menstrual cycle for women and the moon cycle for men, when they marry, is there such a thing that they affect each other's and perform
Yes, they form a third cycle of anticipation. You see, that cycle sets up tremendous anticipation or anxiety, because the man or the male body cannot sense effectively the rhythm of the female body. There are very few men in civilized society can do that. In a primitive society, the male body can sense it accurately like a machine. Because in a primitive society, the male body is trained to use a nostril. In a civilized society, this is one part we have actually brought to the point of atrophy. Only a good pharmacist can use his nostril properly, or a chemist. The nostril is the registering agent of the changes of the rhythms in the body by the odor. And these are the first indications of the rhythms that they are changing. Your own body odor changes too, and a primitive woman can sense that. Now, I've read of a case of two friends who were missionaries, and it was very embarrassing for them to live in a primitive area with the people, and because the natives could always sense their body rhythms and their body changes, and they could always know when they had some intercourse with each other. It's a peculiar phenomenon, because they could actually sense, relate this thing, even if they took a bath and perfumed themselves. The one woman would tell the missionary's wife, "Had a good time last night?" And this can be pretty embarrassing, you know. Simple people, but what you can do? She said, "But how can you know that?" She said, "Well, we smell it." And the male body was the same. He would be there with the garden. The garden was talking and working. And the male gardener was telling about himself. Facts that he himself was pretty astounded. You understand? Yeah, simply by the smell that he was able to relate this body condition. And he began later on to take note of it, because he says this was too uncanny. Because he, after noticing it, he realized there must be some value to it, because they were able to pinpoint when he was out of phase, or he was going to end up in an argument with his wife, or his wife was going to end up in some argument with him, by the depth of the odor and the changes. So after a while, he began to observe himself and notice these changes in the body. Now, in the first few days when the male body is changing, when the cycle is coming on, his breath is very foul. But he doesn't notice it. The wife is the first one who smells it. It always smells like if he's close to a wharf. Yeah, like a fish wharf. Now, when the woman's body is changing, the husband notices it. And he also smells like if he's near a wharf. He doesn't know why. Because it's salt. The body's chemistry is involved with salt water, the saline solution, the blood. These changes throw off their odor. The sodium chloride in the body is throwing off. And these toxins come out through the breath, because that's how it has to escape out when it's discharged. And this is begins to be observed. Then the perspiration comes next. Another interesting thing about the changes of the man is that he gets, the irritability starts to appear in the fingertips. in the first 10 or 12 days, the fingertips, there's always that desire for tapping the finger. You ever see someone, if you look at some, go in a restaurant and look around at male men or for a while, and you'll always see one or two of them doing like that constantly. They're tapping their fingers and they're trying to, and they may be swinging their feet. They are going through the 10th or 12th day of this cycle change. And they're not listening to no music. There's nothing playing in a restaurant, but they're busy tapping away. And it's like a mechanical movement. And they can be talking and totally oblivious of what's going on.
Is that stress or is that just...
It's the build-up of the sperm movement so in the body, reaching a point wanting now to touch out and reaching out for manipulation, reaching out for contact or massage. It has, you see, the hands are tingling for it. So the human body has to be massaged. These are the way this stress is released, but sometimes it's released by tapping to get the stress out. So the male passes through those phases. Now, the drowsiness comes in towards the last part of the cycle. You find that you go to bed very groggy and you wake up with a very groggy feeling. Now, if you're not married, that groggy feeling starts to make you feel tired. So you begin to take either cigarettes or coffee or alcohol to break the stress. You want to go out to the movies, you want to go to some place of entertainment to break the stress. Otherwise you get bored and groggy or sleepy, and like you're crawling all over the wall. Now the problem is true with a woman, but in this society it's easy for the man to go out and go and meet people. So he may go to a club or a dance place or something to entertain or release himself or find some type of outward reaction. Any female, it's not so easy unless they want to go to a nightclub, you see, or they have their parties or what you say, group meetings. They have to have some release, some contact with other human beings. So that tension is building up. Now, the male senses this. Now, if he's married, and if the husband and the wife can sense this between themselves, it's coming on, they can work towards that perfect experience with themselves and release themselves. But if they can't, then they're at variance. They're irritable. Slightest little thing aggravates them. For instance, they can be driving in the car and they're going out, and it's the wife who knows where they're going. And she'll be sitting down in the back or the side of the car or with a friend talking, and the husband is driving up to a certain point where he knows where he's going, but then he may not have all the details clear in his mind. Then he's going to get pretty angry where he has to turn. And he can snap reactions. He's going to go into what you call psychological tantrums. Right there and then, he's going to be very abrupt and sharp, even right in front of the friend. He can't help it. Even he wants to be diplomatic, he can't help it. It comes out very crude out of his mouth. He can't hold it back. And when she answers back because of the tremendous shock, she's answering out of phase, and the answer's coming back sharp and cutting. And it cuts very sharp because this is something going on between the two mechanisms. Now the third person is in the middle looking on, and they may have their own stress points, and then they are trying to soften the point, which one to take side and which not to take sides. Now if it's another female in the car, you have the relationship of the female taking side with the female. If it's another male in the car, the male will take side with the male. Now if it's two couples inside a car, both of them are taking no sides. The husband and wife of the second couple will never take sides in the biting remarks of the other two couples, because they don't want to get involved, and they'll say to themselves, they have to work it out themselves. And they'll be very naive and withdraw and be calm and relaxed, which is a very good thing to do, and hope that these two people can relate, but not fully knowing why they are at each other's throat. Yet if they could recognize what is causing them to be at each other's throat, they could give the right statement or answer to their conditions, and those two people can break the tension and see why they're in that state. That is not the fact that one is not aware of where they're going, and the fact that one is not considerate of telling the other individual how to get there. It is the fact that these forces, these cyclic rhythms in the body, are blocking rationality in both of them. You see, these cyclic movements, these periodical movements, sets up certain electrical energy, certain chemical energy, to block the rational thinking pattern of the individual, temporarily.
But this is one level. There, you are planning on discussing later that there are things at another level that can stop this.
Yes.
Now, is this third phase picked up by the children?
Yes. It's picked up by the children. The children can be in the back of the car, and the father may be driving and wants to have the instruction, and then makes the remark, where do I turn? So the youngest child will cry without even the wife being resentful to the statement, knowing it's a biting remark. The child will cry. The youngest one will cry, let out a scream or some kind of reaction, because subjectively it's telegraphing to the child, and it's picked up. Now the oldest child will start making some kind of a noise to distract everybody. Peculiar phenomenon. And that causes now more tension. The father will start shouting at the child, and the mother will have to start picking up and please listen to daddy, don't get, you know what I mean, don't disturb his driving now. And the mother is caught in the role of the pacifier. Psychologically, what has happened, the eldest child breaking their tension between the two of them by some distracting action has caused now a lessening of the pressure. So the child has been used as a therapy shunt for the stresses between the two parents. Unknown to the child itself, and unknown to the parents, physiologically and but electrically, the child has been used to shunt off that stress. Now, if the parent can recognize that by self-observation at night and realize what has happened during the day in the presence of the children, they can recycle this condition and correct it. But if they don't recognize it, then it starts building up. The elder child will gradually become more, we call it, aggressive in destructive actions, and will become more stubborn. The younger child will become more timid, and therefore a sense of pampering begins to take over. Then there is going to be a clashing now between the parents. The father is going to say, you're pampering the child too much, and if you want to make the child shape up and stop its whimpering. And the mother is going to, only thing the mother can do is put herself in the way and take any kind of abuse just for the child. Yet the husband or the wife does not realize what really is causing it. It's being caused by these cyclic movements inside themselves coming to critical moments.
How do you prevent these critical moments? I mean,
you leave it, you can't.
I mean, how can you relieve the stress other than letting it get too
infected? The nutrition is one way. You have to change your nutrition at the periods when the body is building up these stresses. Remember, certain foods are like chemical bombs, or what you add fuel to it. And if you remove that temporarily during those periods, the stress subsides down and doesn't have a high charge effect. And the will of the individual can cope with it and balance it out. But if foods are used to some extent that would stimulate it, what you call the rajasic type of foods, the stimulant type of foods, you go and eating spaghettis and lots of Mexican food, hot spicy food during that period, you'll find it becomes more stimulating. You have to watch the type of food that don't stimulate. You have to use cooling type of foods so that the body will cool itself down. It isn't that you should not eat the Mexican food or the spicy food. You can eat them at a different period of your cyclic movement, but at the critical moments of that cyclic action, you don't want to add more fuel to it because it gets abrupt. It starts snapping at you. You see? Now,
is a male cycle pretty much like the moon, or does it vary like the female, in that you can have it any time? I mean, can they set their rhythm up at different times like women?
No, the male cannot set it. That's the problem in the male.
Okay, so it does come cyclically.
Yeah. The female, right. The female can set hers by the moon in 28 days. His takes 35 minimum, sometimes up to 48 days.
So it is longer.
Yeah. That's why he's more aggressive. That's why he would always seem to be pursuing you for the feeling of relating to you sexually. The drive is more. That's why the condition is that when the female is satisfied once, she doesn't want to be involved again, but the male wants to be involved again because the energy is still pursuing, is still going again, is still maintaining its pull. Now, if the male hasn't been programmed by shock to what is called periodical impotent reaction, where this condition tapers off early for him, he would not go through that condition. You see, some of them do have that, and then instead of being aggressive, they start tapering off. You see? Now, there are moments when the female needs that contact with the male during that cyclic period, and he has tapered off to an impotent shock, and now he's turning with his back and he's tired and listless. You can do that.
Between 35 and 40 days.
Yes.
When you said that the children being a shunt sometimes, mother and father, you said that when you recognize at the end of the day that what the conditions were, that you could recycle it or cycle it out, will you be showing us during the retreat how to do that?
Yes, that's what the whole thing is based on. You're going through the whole household of life as a male body, female body, the children involved, and the watching for the rhythms and the periods of control and how to do your own house cleaning and consciousness with yourself and the children.
Would you clarify this for me? The cycle
of the moon, who
is affected most by that,
the man or the woman?
If the man has a cycle of 35 or 48 days, then he's not going to be affected by
the moon? Yes.
He is?
Yes.
Well, how about women?
She too.
Okay, they both are.
They both are. Uh-huh. But hers comes quicker.
She's affected twice by it.
Right.
Because of the menstrual cycle and the moon.
Right.
and he's affected by it twice, only to coincide with his 35.
You got it.
So some full moons are going to be more drastic than others.
Right. Now, what time of the year you think it's most drastic?
Summertime.
Why? Because, you know, there's 13 moons a year.
Yeah, there's 13.
They're not 12 moons to a year. There are 13 full moons to a year. Therefore, their drive is always in the summertime. It's in the heat of the activity. The male body is more predominantly driven into a state of what you call horniness. Because of the 13 moons, the 13 full moons in a whole lunar year. And it's August, July, these are the most driving force period. That's why you find the beaches are flooded with all the male activity.
Now, do we pick up spiritual and psychic cycles as well? Like over a period of 2 or 3 or 4 years, it seems as if, you know, it can't just all be the weather. It seems to have ups and downs over this length of time too. Are we picking up not only body plant changes and planet changes and star changes, but are we also picking up psychic and...
Yes, we're picking up psychic and spiritual changes in the individual, because you have now, in the commitment of marriage between two individuals, you have a spiritual locking into one another. The auras are locked to some degree, the commitment. So those commitments are going to border on the extrasensory or the psychic or on the spiritual, because the wife would not want to perform an action without first consulting the husband, and the husband would not want to perform action without consulting the wife, because these are tendencies that are brought into focus when a marriage is consummated or accepted between two partners. She's got to know how much he's going to make, and he wants to know if he's going to work or not, or stay home. These are going to run into psychic conditions.
Well, but will it run into psychic conditions from things that we don't ordinarily consider being around?
Yes, it will.
You know, like, I mean, really other spirits.
Right, right. Because sometimes the man, right, the man can actually have a dream or some experience that can trigger off something more in the woman. And a woman can also have something that will trigger off in him.
Okay.
Now,
so that the woman can be affected by the man's dream.
Yes.
Yeah, I believe that. Yes.
Especially if they're talking.
Yes. Well, it's very true. No, it's true. It's true.
Now, do all men have these terrifically aggressive and violent dreams? I mean, is that natural for man?
Yeah.
So, okay.
You know why?
Because they're in stress, right?
No.
We really must do this for our children. They need the information.
The reason why the male body is under the stress, it was the first form that took the shock when it was created. The female body was second that took the shock.
What kind of shock?
Environmental shock. When the Lord created man, male and female, he created man first, the male form first. Then he created the female form second. These two forces came together, one after the other. The positive charge and the negative charge. The positive charge is a projecting charge. To understand that, let's turn up some light here and I'll show you. Here is the cosmic force field.
And he's going to break his environmental ways. The moment it triggers off, it hits the first wave, and that's the shock. And then hits the second wave, that's the shock. Third wave, the shock. Now, let's say it represents infinity. The three aspects of creation. When it hits the final, it's moving backward now. Registering inside as a positive wave. So it already was pushed out as a positive charge. From within this return now comes the second wave out. But instead of pulling back, the wave is staying out. Because they got to lock in. To line up themselves again. To synchronize. So that eventually the wave would look like this. Positive has gone out and bounced back with tentacles and returned to the source. That's why it's pulling back in. The negative goes out but doesn't pull back. It stays out with tentacles stretched out. Because it has to be set to polarity. They got to balance each other. They have to compromise to each other. So when they do line up, that's what the word is. Union comes back, that's why I say marriage is made in heaven, not like man. The unity of these forces triggered to come together, to line up, they make one being. That's where our problem is. That the male is suddenly exposed to the first shock by a positive charge. Therefore, he has what is called the drive for depositing and reaching out. Female has the drive for nesting or holding or locking, anchoring, laying down the foundations. So in the female mechanism, the nesting quality is predominant than the male mechanism. The male mechanism is constantly facing shock waves. It's constantly conquering shock waves. Now, in 24 hours, the male body is exposed to more shock waves by competitive reaction, by environmental exposure, than the female body. The female body gets her exposure from interaction. She doesn't get the shock waves from competing. She doesn't have to go and break the ice and create a new empire. She doesn't have to go out and try to show them that the world that she can build airplanes or to march across Africa to meet Mr. Livingston. You follow what I'm saying? She is not the empire-building personality. It's the male body that does that, constantly seeking new frontiers, new exposures to shock. The female body is coming on behind, picking up the pieces and trying to make semblance out of chaos. That's why it's called a nesting force. But her shocks come from this disjointed chaos. Whereas in the male body, it's the
their shock comes from the challenge. See? Now, the male would like to see the female more aggressive and less timid in front of a dog or in the woods with animals or in society with an automobile to bear that asphalt jungle and take on a little more gumption, because the male body thrives upon this aggressive interaction with the environment. It doesn't fear, so it doesn't want to be associated with something that tends to run from it. So these two are constantly are pulling. Now, when the female body takes on that type of activity, it can reach to a point where it can be over-domineering. And that is going to throw off the male mechanism now. The male mechanism is going to resent this domineering because it initiated it. That's why we say patriarchal society is afraid of matriarchal society. You see? The Amazons are powerful people when they became Amazons. So the point is this, the male body will start to react if the female body becomes too over-dominant. It needs an equal partnership, yes, in facing the shock, but it does not need a one-sided action. Equally true, the female body is resentful of the over-softness of femininity in the male body at a certain point. If the female sees that the male is becoming too over soft and not standing up for certain things as a male should, and then she has to assume that role of dominancy, then there is breakdown between the two. There is that conflict. It is a fine line we walk of balance between the male and the female body, that the male holds a certain line of dominance and pliancy, and the female body holds the same thing. Otherwise, they say she's too mannish and he's too womanish. This is the term we use to seem to pin down the behavior pattern.
Is this driving force, this love drive and watching the woman not like the drive and being afraid of things, is this why most men consider themselves smarter than women?
Yes. I've cut my own throat.
Are men smarter than women?
I know they are.
Well,
or is it just that they think differently?
Is man basically charged positively and females basically charged negative? Now, I hate to say negative because I don't mean bad, but on these ways, is electrically speaking, how? What is the setup?
The setup is that the female body is designed to anchor itself to nature. That's why it's out. See the waves out. It's anchoring out. It's locking on to Father Nature or Mother Nature. Which is it? Woman's body is designed to anchor itself to Mother Nature, which is the nesting principle. The man's body is not designed to anchor to Mother Nature. It's to get away from Mother Nature, take flight. That's why he's going into the planetary system. He's trying to get away from the gravitational pull all the time, from the enclosing rings that holds him to Mother Nature. He's cutting himself free even from the apron strings. Even he says, touch me not, I'm not yet ascended unto the Father. Even in the spiritual realm, he's breaking away from the anchor pull. This is the charge. That's how the charge works in him. It's on a pull. Out.
So no matter how smart or intellectual anyone is, it is predominantly colored by whether they're male or female.
Right. So your male masters, and they have female masters. Look at that female master over there. She's a female master, and there is one over here. Now this is a perfect marriage up here. These two are husband and wives, Ramakrishna and his wife. And Ramakrishna was there. Highlights in the ashram in front of everyone because everyone bowed to him as a bright light. Yet in inner awareness, the wife was more evolved than Ramakrishna. But she never got the recognition until Ramakrishna passed on, that she was a little more aware inwardly and stable than Ramakrishna. Now there are other forces reversed, taking her life. Her husband is not as evolved as her. She's far more evolved than her husband. And her husband is a very spiritual man. Now in the case of this master, he's more evolved than the wife. But the wife can match him. She has the same driving capacity to match. Now in the grandfather, he doesn't marry.
So women need a driving capacity to attain a higher spiritual life. Is that right?
Yes. But you see, a woman starts off on a spiritual drive because of the intuitive feeling she has earlier than a man. A woman is more prone to be spiritual from an early stage of her life to the latter stage of her life more than a man, simply because she relies more on her feeling. A man relies more on his reason and logic, and therefore he's not so easy to be spiritual. He has a natural aversion to spiritual things because they are not tangible enough in terms of his drive for survival. His drive for survival is to break open new ideas, new frontiers, new thinking. So it's difficult for him to be spiritual in the early part of his life. But he is relentless, more methodical in the pursuit when he decides upon it to the end of it than the woman. See, he brings with him his logic and reason to bear with his feeling. That's why you see of the male body can go through the privations of the spiritual life at a later stage than the female body. But she's already got the love and the warmness and the tendency of compassion, all these things in mother, and the softness that she's accepted in that spiritual role. In the male body, the coarseness is there in the early stages. Then he's got to taper off and become soft and warm. Now the same thing was happening to Yogananda's parents. You remember when you read Yogananda's parents, mother was always the one who taught them the bittersweet of the Bible. They learned their ABCs of what a spiritual life is, and daddy was cold, mathematical, and until the wife passed on. Then Yogananda said he began to discern that his father was slowly metamorphosing into the qualities of the mother. Why? Because the adult life of the male now is starting to come up. The feeling nature was starting to rise like a thermometer within him. The methodical nature was starting to diminish because it ran its course, so it now has to taper off. So you'll find that the male body, it's at a later stage, it becomes driving more predominant. In the early stages, it doesn't. Unless the individual has brought this in his past life into the present life for this drive, that he'll immediately gravitate at an early age towards the spiritual life and pursue it. But by and large, the male body doesn't pull in that direction. See, the male body is dominated by reason, primarily first, and second by feeling. The female body is dominated by feeling first, and then reason second. And the relationships of contact. The male body is dominated by eyes. Female body is dominated by ears. Now, yet both bodies can maintain their balanced relationship by smell, which we ignore because we don't live in primitive societies no more.
How do we develop that smell?
Not develop, you have to re-educate it. You've already got it, but you've shut it off.
Well, re-educate it.
Stop using deodorants. Well, let me explain something, how you can re-educate that by odor. You have to first observe yourself. How the body smells. And you begin from the new moon. The first part of the moon. And try to relate to its odor.
Your own body odor.
You have to try to relate it during the period of the new moon. And then observe it when it goes in towards the full moon. Then observe it going into the last quarter of the moon. See the first quarter, second quarter, full, and last. You have to observe it within that 28-day period. And then continue on to 35 days. In the meantime, you have to observe how your body feels in terms of the nerve endings in the sexual region. The irritabilities and the different exposure to the various female bodies that you have seen within that time, how your body reacting. And observe that when you come in contact and see someone and you're stimulated by the eyes, how you breathe. Because you breathe a certain way, your body is secreting a certain odor. Because there's tension. There is that particular movement inside of the mechanism. Now, you see the advertisement in the TV and the newspaper that says, tension gives you body odor, therefore use deodorant. But the tension is the stimulation brought on by sight or hearing in both individuals. So if it's in the male body, the tension or the suspense, the anticipation, and the denial, the aggravations are all producing body chemistry to the point where it can be noticed. And you have to tag it and observe it. Then you're re-educating the nostrils for the first time. You may start off very foul. Gradually tapering off to a musky odor. At the highest peak of the body's cycling, your body odor would be more like close to the ocean, the saltiness of the body. Yeah, if you read some of your magazines where they talk about the seaman goes down to sea in a salty brine, feels himself strong and brawny and can take on the world, and he beats his chest and pulls his beard and looks at the spits of the wind. These are all body language communication of the peculiar body cycles that the author is inadvertently writing and didn't recognize what he's doing, you know. He's actually describing how the male body feels when it lacks the contact with the female body. It's, you know, the peculiar sensation.
If you really get good at that, though, you can tell by being around other people their reaction to you.
Yes. Now, in a spiritual man's body or in a spiritual woman's body, these odors now change to more softer, subtle odors, sweeter odors. These are the sudden changes in them. Now, this is the process of love now coming in. And the desire pattern from a physical nature is slowly shifting to a more aesthetic quality inside. Though that doesn't say that the male body doesn't have the physical drive or the female body has the physical drive. They both have. But the communication now is more tactual. The communication is based on touch. It's not more sight. It's not more hearing. It's not more smelling. But it's more touch. How you communicate on touch? Because in touch, frequencies are transferred. Therefore, we have now the tendency to transmit healing vibrations. The more the man or the woman becomes spiritual, the more the healing powers are flowing from a tactile nature. Now, you read the autobiography of a yogi. What was the first experience she had when he met him? When Anandamoy Ma met Yogananda, these are two spiritual people. What did she do?
She went outside to see him.
And she did what?
Ginger says she touched his feet.
Yes, tactual. And then threw her neck around him. And it's not customary for an Indian woman to do that. To embrace. The Indian woman never embrace. In open? No. You never see an Indian woman do that. She's breaking all traditions. No Swami would even embrace a woman. These are custom traditional because their bodies are tactile. They're working on a tactile level. So they don't want you to touch them.
Why did she do that? What was he thinking?
A Swami would not let an ordinary person touch him too much on a tactile level because they may be draining the body energy and they may have too much vibrations that are negative in them. Unless he wants it, then he will do it and work on certain karmic debts for them. But their consciousness is locked in a tactile nature. She is an evolved woman. He is an evolved man. When they met, she said these words, "Father, I am meeting you for the first time in the body." And he says, "Yes, mother." He didn't see her as a woman, per se. He saw her as the cosmic mother principle. She didn't see him as a man because she was married. She saw him as the cosmic father principle. And now, on a tactual level, they are making intercommunication.
You know, there's a picture in the new edition, the autobiography of she, her husband.
Yes.
And she's hugging him around the neck.
All right. And you see how shy she was?
Yeah, but she, in that picture, she is just a beautiful woman.
Good.
Now, look, she's aged considerably in that. Is she much older than that?
Oh, I think she's still out here.
Well, she, look at the difference, though, in the two pictures.
Friend, you say she's aged?
She's not compared to that picture. How old is she in that?
Anandamoy is maybe in her, close to her 80s.
In that picture?
No, in that picture she's in her 60s.
Oh, well look at, I'll show you the picture in autobiography. It looks to be in 30 or 40 in that.
Yes.
But yeah, she was hugging her in the
picture. And if you see her in a living body, she's supposed to come to this country. She's a very young looking person. I've seen pictures taken before and after, one after the other, they're never the same. I've never seen pictures of any of these people that they're same, that you can capture the same, they look the same.
Saints are much different anyway when it comes to photography.
Because it's not the peculiar phenomenon of life in them. They're working on tactile levels.
All the
interactions
is through
that level.
On that level.
Is that why you have this tingling feeling in your hands more?
Now you're recognizing, and that has a rhythm too. And when you're advancing on a spiritual life, you begin to recognize the rhythms of these movements.
Sometimes you feel like if you just can't touch another person, you're just going to die unless you can touch your
Yes.
Body. Just to put your
just
hand
a merely
up.
Touch.
Mm-hmm.
A mother likes to touch her child. The child likes to touch the mother. Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's why there's so much touching in this group. Yeah. We touch each other all the time.
And that is what breaks down the inhibitions and release the pressure in the individual and make him a whole individual for the first time. There is
no... I like it. This is really... This accounts for the relationship at early birth, when you first hold your child.
Yes.
That settles down
all their
screaming and hollering.
Right.
Well, that's what they like to do the most, too.
And they want... Quite true.
Born
immediate born child wants to be... That's why they should give the child to the parent immediately for fondling and touching. The tactual relationship is very important all through life. In the highly spiritual life between masters and their disciples, it's all tactual. It's constant touch. Yogananda, when he was in the body, he'd be always walking with his disciple and holding their hands. And one day... And he would always knock them on their head or touch them on the face or hit them with a finger. Or slap them.
Is this the same principle when you actually feel a touch that has not even touched you but has touched somebody else?
Yes. You see, we touch it with our eyes too, by dasha. See, when a darshan is going on, we are actually touching you by the waves of our eyes in the room. That's why you feel a peculiar wave going through the room. This is a higher form of tactual contact. See, inasmuch as a man is stimulated by sight and only stimulated by hearing, and in the evolved mechanism now, when the two are working for spiritual growth and are making contact on a tactile level, sight can touch you and hearing can touch you now. This is peculiar. These are so subtle forces in the human body that you can touch a person by the hearing, and you can touch them with your eyes, and you can touch them with your hand. Let alone you can touch them in your thought now.
And this accounts for the eyes that you notice the first time.
Yes.
I know in the darshan, I always hear that's the signs of laugh, pity, blissful feeling. Sound always increasing.
Oh, that's touching you by the ears.
And I'm seeing properly, I see it.
You see? Unity or oneness is impeded by the five senses because we live in a human body. We are only in oneness in the energy fields, totally. But because we have a physical body, we are restricted to the five senses, to see, to smell, to hear, to touch. So, a darshan is a very high form of actual contact with another being. That's why the woman said, if I would touch the hem of his garment, I would be made whole. This is what we're talking about, the tactile forces.
And he felt it.
Well, naturally you have to feel it, because that is super tactile. And you touch this, I can't feel this, if there's not a little bond between the two, if there's no homogeneous bond between the two in consciousness. So, you can look at someone and radiate this love. And you feel that energy goes back and forth. That is tactile contact. But in that tactile contact, there is a danger in the unethical behavior of the individual. That's why the
male body and the female body has got to learn a lot about themselves before they can
be trusted in tactile contact.
Oh, in looking and in lust at others.
Ah. You used the word I said yesterday, the most powerful force is not ego. Lust, because it's a very subtle one that can trip you up. It trips you up in the tactual relationships. Ego don't. There is no tripping up of your nature in an ego trip by a tactual action, but you can be tripped up by lust in tactual contact.
Well, ego is mainly just setting yourself up.
Right.
Lust is trying to set another.
that's where they realize intactual relationship on a level of the spiritual growth. That's why the masters do not want their students to touch too often or touch them too much, because they may drop into that particular relationship of feeling a lust action. Right. Now, the person may touch another one and certain sensations come up in them that they have never had before, and they may relate to those sensations as lustful sensations. So this is where the peculiarity in the tactual contact comes in. You see? Because you don't know, let's say you're married and your husband never touched you a certain way, and all of a sudden you meet someone and you get a tactual contact in a very honest, simple, innocent reaction. But in your mind, it triggers some condition in your body that you never felt before, and this can suddenly lead to that particular sensation that you may feel, an erotic action. And that can make your mind now start thinking in terms of lust. Because healing force is erotic. It has to stimulate energy in a spot to heal, and it will cause itching. If you want to rub the person's body that is sore, by the time you stroke that spot, you are setting into force many, many sensations. One, the release of the tension of the pain there, which is soothing, and if it's too over emphasized, it can lead now to the next sensation of erotism. And if it's too overemphasized, it can lead now to manual stimulation. You see, there are two subtle forces that are too closely related in a tactile condition. Now, if the energy released is not bringing on conditions like lust or erotic action in the body, but it's actually soothing the individual and releasing the tension and the stress, and raising the consciousness to the feeling of joy, then this is a safe factor of relationship. Because remember, a male and a female body makes contact, and the time they make the most significant contact is when they are in bed without any clothes. The naked body is making the most highest tactile contact. Therefore, these are exchanges of different types of feelings, both from the standpoint of lust or the standpoint of release. Now, the nearest thing to that would be a massage. The nearest thing to be with that would be swimming. But in swimming, again, water acts as a barrier to shut down the feeling. Only when you come out of the water and in the sun, then that feeling is raised up again. One seldom lusts in water, but he lusts more in the dry sun on the beach, because of the peculiar phenomena of water. You can see the person in water and you may swim, but the drive in water is tapered down more than the drive outside of water, because you're 80% water already, and the body cools down faster in the water, and the heat is dissipated quicker in water. The tactile contact stimulates thermal relationship or heat, which brings about the feeling of lust.
So if one were to have a good infrared camera and make studies on that, you'd come up with definite...
You would come up with definite information as how the frequency of lust is triggered off. But then you can also see now the ethical nature of it. Remember, Jesus embraced Mary, and all the other masses embrace, but there is still that ethical force from the standpoint of love and the standpoint of healing. But it's, again, we have to be very conscious of the fact what this other sensation can do, because that's the one that tricks us. He says, one master put it this way, the devil will follow you right to your closest part of your bosom. In other words, love comes from the heart, which is in the bosom. And when you embrace, you're bringing another person close to you. It's so tricky a sensation that it'll get it right in that point between you and bite you.
come to the thought of sublimation, learning to control.
We can't come to that until we understand more of the body before we can deal with what is called sublimation of the forces for channeling it. We'll deal with that as we go on. We can't jump. We have to cover these forces to understand why we are there. You see, a child loves to be fondled. And if the parent impedes a child from touching its body, it gets a shock. And then the shock registers into inquiry and into daring. And before you know it, the child veers off into an abnormal behavior. If the child is told to recognize that the body is a healthy mechanism and it's like it should be massaged and rubbed, it will never veer off into an abnormal behavior. It will respect the body because the tactile nature will develop correctly. We don't develop the tactile nature in ourselves.
That's why we give our children back rubs before they go to bed.
Right. Right. But you see, the thing is this, we don't educate ourselves that way, we don't use it properly, and therefore we end up deviating. Massage is very important. And it's a very important aspect, and we'll deal a lot with it because you have to understand why the cells need the tactile contact. For it, all right, why does a man and a woman touch each other when they get married and then they argue, what did they do? Do they ever want to touch each other after they argue? No. What is the sweetest time between a male and a female after they argue? What they call that? Makeup and kiss and makeup. But kiss and makeup is to touch out, reach out again to touch on a tactile basis. And there the spurt of the energy is increased more than the previous spurt before the previous argument. You can always measure that peculiar increase of the energy going out after argument between a male and a female and try to make up and reach out to reconcile the bodily forces. The bodily forces secrete a higher charge, a higher intensity rate after a confrontation. That's why they say the period of reconciliation is always the sweetest, because it is the ever new joy coming through the cells after a confrontation. Now, this can get neurotic after a while because you figure out that every time you're happy after an argument, you want to set up more arguments. So, but that's not the way to do it. After you reconcile yourself to the individual, it is learning now to taper and organize yourself with the individual. Therefore, the tactile part is very important, to know how to be communicative with the tactile part.
Do you short circuit something if you touch during an argument to stop it?
Yes.
You can stop the argument probably right away.
You stop it by just touching the person.
Well, but that's all right.
Yeah. If you and the other person is arguing, if you and the other person is arguing, you know, and they get in to the point where laugh and just do like, you know. So remember this. We can't argue with each other if there was no breakdown in communication. Because the first time when you met, there was something in you that triggered the spark in him. And there's something in him that triggered a spark in you. But if that spark is never tactually connecting or retained all through your married life, then the argument...